Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
All right, let's take a couple minutes now to examine some of the questions you might have that this Swedish hiring robot poses. Iforma Ajunwa of Cornell University has studied the use of artificial intelligence in the hiring process here in the U.S. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Is it possible for AI to completely eliminate human bias in the hiring process?
I would say no, because you still have to remember that AI isn't fully automated. What we call AI are really machine learning algorithms. And so the people who are creating them do have to be conscious of the ways that human bias could still be encoded in those algorithms. Mm-hmm. And they would have to make really conscious decisions to eliminate those bias to begin with.
So we just heard about this quote-unquote unbiased social robot that's going to be used in job interviews in Sweden. Is there anything remotely similar to that being used now here in the U.S.?
Certainly, yes. There are many hiring algorithms that are now in use in the United States. My co-author and I conducted an informal survey of the top 20 Fortune 500 companies, which are mostly retail companies. Mm-hmm. And many of those companies require candidates to submit their resumes online, where ostensibly the resume will then pass through some hiring algorithms. Mm. And before you think, oh, this is just, you know, relegated to the blue collar market or just the hourly workforce, also white shoe companies like Goldman Sachs have also moved to automated hiring. So starting in 2016, Goldman Sachs moved to video interviews, for example, to interview its entering class of summer associates.
Well, what about legal concerns with using AI for hiring? I mean, would someone even have grounds to sue for, say, discrimination if they didn't get a job and the hiring decision was made by an algorithm?
So that's where it gets more complicated, right? Because a job applicant could suspect that the reason they were refused a job was based on a characteristic such as race or gender. Mm-hmm. And this is certainly prohibited by law. But the problem is how to prove this. So the law requires that you prove either intent to discriminate or you show a pattern of discrimination. Automated hiring platforms actually make it much harder to do either of those. Mm. And a lot of times the algorithms that are part of the hiring system, they're considered proprietary, meaning that they're trade secret. So you may not actually be able to be privy to exactly how the algorithms were programmed and also to exactly what attributes were considered. So that actually makes it quite difficult for a job applicant.
Iforma Ajunwa teaches employment and labor law at Cornell University. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
For years, doctors and other healthcare workers have largely remained silent when faced with violent attacks from patients and patients' families. Many have considered it part of the job. As Marlene Harris-Taylor of member station WCPN in Cleveland reports, that is changing, and some labor groups are pushing for more government oversight.
When you enter any Cleveland Clinic emergency room these days, the first stop is through a metal detector.
What I'm doing now is just checking your bag, make sure there's no weapons inside. Okay, metal detector says you have no other weapons, no other metal. You good to proceed?
Cleveland Clinic officials say they confiscate thousands of weapons like knives, pepper spray, and guns each year. Metal detectors were installed in response to what CEO Tom Mihaljevic is calling an epidemic.
There is a very fundamental problem in U.S. healthcare that very few people speak about, and that's the violence against healthcare workers. Daily, literally daily, we are exposed to violent outbursts, in particular in our emergency rooms.
Many healthcare workers, like those here in the clinic's ER, say physical and verbal abuse comes primarily from patients, some of whom are disoriented because of illness or from medication. Sometimes nurses and doctors are abused by family members who are on edge because their loved one is so ill. The clinic is also now using other safety measures like panic buttons on ID badges, and there are more safety cameras and plainclothes officers in ERs. But these incidents aren't limited to emergency rooms.
There was this one point where she swung and she had just glanced off the side of my chin.
That's intensive care nurse Alicia Shin, who works in Los Angeles at the University of Southern California's Keck Hospital. She tells the story of a patient who broke free from restraints and then kicked and punched her in the chest before throwing that swing at her face.
If I hadn't dodged that punch, she could have knocked me out. She very well could have killed me.
Shin says the encounter left her shaken and anxious when she returned to work days later. Shin says she used to be afraid to speak out about these type of attacks because of what she says is a culture of accepting violence in most hospitals.
It is expected that you're going to get beat up from time to time.
According to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, incidents of serious workplace violence are 4 times more common in healthcare than in private industry. Groups representing doctors and nurses say while the voluntary safety improvements that some hospitals have enacted are a good first step, more needs to be done. Michelle Mahan is with the labor group National Nurses United, and she says hospital culture needs to change.
So what happens if they do report is in some cases, unfortunately, they are treated as if they are the ones who don't know how to do their job or that it's their fault that this happened. There's a lot of focus on de-escalation techniques. Those are helpful tools, but oftentimes they are used to blame workers.
In California, the Nurses Labor Union pushed for a law giving OSHA more authority to monitor hospital safety. The group is now backing a national effort to do the same thing.
This standard that we're recommending federally holds the employer responsible. It mandates reporting of the incidents and transparency.
Under proposed legislation, hospitals would be required to implement violence prevention plans and could face fines for not reporting incidents to OSHA. The goal is to hold administrators more accountable for acts of violence in their hospitals. For NPR News, I'm Marlene Harris-Taylor.
This story is part of a partnership with NPR, IdeaStream, and Kaiser Health News.
It was the name behind iconic magazines like Ebony and Jet. But Johnson Publishing Company, one of the most successful black-owned corporations in U.S. history, has filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy protection. The Chicago-based company has been struggling in recent years. Karen Grigsby Bates from our Code Switch podcast has more.
In a 2002 interview with the National Visionary Leadership Project, Ebony's founder, John H. Johnson, was very firm about his magazine's mission.
Ebony is a magazine devoted to making people feel good, making people proud of their heritage.
Until that time, most black Americans didn't show up in the mainstream media unless the stories were about criminal activity or destitution. John Johnson wanted them to see something else.
First time I ever saw a black person in print in a tuxedo was in Ebony.
That formula showcasing black achievement and prosperity kept Ebony flush for decades. It financed a landmark tower on Tony Michigan Avenue and a nationally known haute couture fashion show. But the publishing world was changing and shrinking. John Johnson died in 2005, and his daughter, Linda Johnson Rice, tried to run the company before selling Ebony to a pair of black venture capitalists in 2016. The duo soon made news for not paying several Ebony writers. There were two remaining assets of Johnson Publishing, a stunning photo archive that is the institutional memory of post-war Black America and its Fashion Fair cosmetics line. Now those two will be sold. Fans of Fashion Fair, the first high-end makeup for Black women, had been worried for a while that e-commerce was killing the brand. Late last year, on YouTube, makeup artist Lachelle Farrington wondered about Fashion Fair's fate.
I know at the counter in my city, the person that works for the counter doesn't even know when they're going to get items in stock. It's like Russian roulette.
With yesterday's filing, the last bullet has left the chamber. The company statement says an unnamed group with, quote, a proven track record of advancing cultural preservation and building and operating legacy brands has made an offer for some of those assets, and the bankruptcy trustee will evaluate the offer. And after 77 years of proud existence, the Johnson Publishing Company will soon be history. Karen Grigsby Bates, NPR News.
Context of White Supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, April 12, 2019. So I have been told. This is our weekly forum, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. We have a new number. Whites changed the call-in number, so the new dial-in number, if you would like to participate in the program, 605-313-5164. Code is the same, 564-943-pound. That is the number. Again, this is not a broadcast for spectators. If you are a Black entrepreneur, self-employed, even if you work directly for whites and or non-whites, if you have figured out any strategies that work well for you to solve problems without creating any new problems, make sure you get all of the goodies, raises, and everything else that you would like on your job, please dial that new number, 605-313-5164. Code 564-943-pound. *61 if you would like to participate. Before we get to folks who dialed in, emails galore, all the rest of it. We said for a long time, 10-year anniversary of the cows, the importance of Black journalists. The announcement this week, Johnson Publishing Company filing for bankruptcy. And certainly I'd said we were going to talk about that on workplace racism, the importance of this publishing company and all of the work that they have done with Ebony Jet Magazine and getting content out that specifically to address racism, white supremacy. I think even Negro Digest, which became the Black World later on, was also under Johnson Publishing. And that had a lot of content about white supremacy, racism, directly. If you can go to any university or college libraries that have that on file, you can get some of the archives. But I think that's a huge aspect of workplace racism because one of the articles that I read in the Washington Post that was talking about the bankruptcy filing was talking about the different problems that they were facing in the 21st century, as have been many publishing companies, not just the Johnson Publishing Company. But in the system of racism, white supremacy, it's going to be especially challenging. This is certainly not to discourage any Black, non-white people from going into business, but it is, I think, very important to just be realistic. The system of white supremacy, hey, they burn the midnight oil to figure out ways to make it especially difficult for Black entrepreneurs, even if you're not an entrepreneur, even if you do work directly for whites, burning the midnight oil, figuring out ways to make it difficult. So I think that's important to remember, be realistic, and include a counter-racist code when you venture out, start that business, or if you're going to be self-employed, be mindful of that. That doesn't mean that you've escaped racism, white supremacy, that they generally are not friends, or at minimum, they don't even just sit idly by and allow Black entrepreneurs to operate, not in a system of white supremacy racism. very unfortunate to hear about that this week. I also, even in the report that we just heard, I thought it was interesting. I wrote it down. They were saying that the goal of Ebony Magazine was to make people feel good. And yeah, that would be something I would have to comment on during a different segment. That's not really workplace racism related, but that did stick out as well. Briefly, some of the audio segments that we heard in the edition, the second audio segment talking about the violence that hospital workers face. I thought of Thomas in New York. He talked frequently about his time working at the hospital in New York and the amount of racism that he faced, enforcement officials coming, you know, in and out of the place, just that it being dangerous. And I think when he used to talk about that, I think I had said that I didn't really think of hospitals as dangerous for someone who works there, or just period. I didn't really think of them as a dangerous environment. But then, you know, hearing what he was saying, it totally made logical sense. So that was the first thing I thought of when I heard that report. And then, you know, them talking about the metal detectors and all of that. Why, it just seems like if you're going to be in that environment, wow, extreme. I mean, I remember I almost thought of playing some of Thomas's commentary from when he was working at the hospital, and he used to call in and talk about some of those same things that you would need an extensive code about how you're going to deal with that to keep yourself as safe as possible. And it also sounds like an environment that you might not want to be in for a long period of time if you can help it. I mean, that type of where you might be subject to physical assault, like that is a lot of stress to have to deal with for most people. Like that's the sort of thing that I would definitely want a timetable for how long you want to be in that position. The first segment that we heard, NPR, they had almost a whole portion on just workplace racism. I think they had at least two or three segments that were talking about racism and whether or not having these different artificial intelligence programs involved in the hiring process, if that will really help mitigate white supremacy racism. And I think we've heard from many folks, many listeners, I think they even have books that have been written about this and saying emphatically, absolutely not. Who's programming all of the apps? That's to begin with. And, you know, once you begin and end right there, even if it is a non-white person that's doing the programming, who are they being employed by? And just all the rest of it. The white supremacy racism dominates all areas of people activity, especially the tech industry, that those apps are probably not going to do very much at all. They've probably already got them somehow the coding in to be able to recognize black names. And I've heard some of the details before where sometimes it was linking information to your zip code where there's already data about where the Negroes tend to live. So if your address is in a certain zip code, then you might be less likely to get a call back in. Just lots of different ways where it'll still be marketed that, oh, yeah, we've got all this AI and there's no human involved, so it couldn't be any bias or anything like that. And that is not the case at all. If anything, I think that adds to the refinement to just have a lot of non-white people being even more confused about why they are not getting jobs and why these things are happening, because they'll be thinking that it couldn't be racism. I didn't even have an interview with a person. I didn't even talk to a person. I, you know, did everything on the screen and, you know, it was a robot that rejected me or didn't give me a call back. So, of course, you know, it couldn't be racism. Continuing. Lots of people wrote in this week, again, from the yoga retreat. That was a suggestion that some people might be cautious about dialing in because they don't want to be recognized or have any unnecessary problems. Totally understand. If you don't want to dial, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com and we can read your commentary on the air if you have a problem on the job or if you have something that works well to solve problems, we can share, and or if you have suggestions, comments on what's been discussed on the platform this evening, you can email and we will share on the broadcast. Let's see, I'll try to see if I can read everything that has been written in for the week. Let's see, number one, this is from Kizzy's cousin. I mentioned in my report that I attended a meeting with a race soldier, female, who made us late to the venue. I knew it was going to be a long journey, and she likes to interrogate me. For the most part, I give her limited or nonsense answers. Oh, messed up the screen. Limited or nonsense answers, which she and I both know are lies. However, she is very brazen and knew I would need a strategy to cut down her opportunity for asking questions. So I brought some work with me to complete on the train that neutralized her somewhat. While we waited at the station, she went and brought a newspaper to occupy herself, which was fine with me. Now that is interesting. Giving nonsense answers that both of you know are lies, and the white person is acceptable with that. That's interesting. I have said before, and I think this is going to come up in some of the other people who wrote in. If you are in situations on the job, if you're going to be, sometimes you might have to road trip with a colleague. Maybe you have to drive, 90 minutes or an hour someplace for a meeting or training or something of that nature. So you're going to be doing round trip, maybe 2 hours in a vehicle and maybe even a meal together or something like that, to already have planned out. If we're going to have to talk, these are the parameters in terms of what I'm going to talk about. What I'm not going to talk about is already established. I've already said I'm a big advocate of not just answering a query. You don't just respond. You respond and you toss a question back. And sometimes that might be a redirect question where you totally change the subject when you ask your question back. That gives you some control in the conversation about what we're going to be talking about, maybe even how long we stay on a particular topic. And it stops, because sometimes if you have these brazen racists, sometimes they will just pilfer you with questions. It'll just be one after another, after another, after another. And you can interrupt that with a question of your own. I love it if it's a situation you bring work. You got your headphones, so you can already let them know, oh, yeah, I got to get, I'm a little bit behind. I want to make sure I go over the policy so that I can be tip top. We get there for the meeting. Bam. That can cut the chatting out right there. They can get their newspaper or whatever they want to do for the meeting. But love it. Be prepared for that, so you don't get in those situations and either get tense or end up talking too much or, saying incorrect things. Before I read the next one, I was thinking today that I do, tell folks regularly that workplace racism is not always the most pleasant subject matter to discuss. It's not always fun to talk about how we've been abused and mistreated in the workplace. I totally understand this. So I do try to sprinkle in different times where I've been mistreated or just different problems that I've faced myself in workplace settings. I have done so before and, spent long periods of time talking about different situations that I've dealt with as well. I know one that I can think of, policy and procedure. I try to emphasize that on the broadcast regularly. Review your policy and procedure. Make sure you've read the entire policy and procedure so that you know it, and then you can review as needed. And try to read the entire policy and procedure before you actually accept a job, which is what I was doing in this case. So I was reading the policy and procedure, and I don't even know if workplace racism, it didn't. Workplace racism didn't exist at this time. So I was reading the policy and procedure, going over all the details. Actually, I have to make sure I give it correctly. I'm talking with the potential employer, as it is at the time, potential employer, and we're going over the details. We get agreement, and then it's okay. You'll get the policy and procedure and your hiring contract and all that. You'll get that, in a few days or whatever it is. Great. I get it. I review, and there are discrepancies. Like, wait a minute. This is not, what we said. Let's hang on a second. It's about 95% there, but just a few little details here and there. And it took a lot of going back and just fine tooth details, because sometimes it would just be one sentence that was off. And it's like, wait a minute. And my view, anything like that, if you have had a discussion with an employer about whatever your status is supposed to be, what your salary is supposed to be, hours, vacation time, any aspect of the conditions of your employment, if you all have verbally agreed and then you get the contract, it should be identical. There should not be, any waiver or, we said I was supposed to have 5 weeks vacation and now on the contract it said two. Like, make sure you read it in detail and do not sign until you are totally satisfied. This is what we agreed to. This is what should match on the contract. Be very, very meticulous about that. And just reading your policy and procedure and the conditions of your employment, read it with a fine tooth comb. Sometimes the detail is extraordinary in those types of documents. Next, person that wrote in. Okay. Very thankful to have found your program. I am 31 years old and, like most, in a predominantly white environment. I am reading Mr. Fuller's textbook and am currently on the section of politics. At every workplace I have been, the female white supremacists always try to pry into my personal life and ask intrusive questions. Each time they do this, I give them very vague information. Feel like I heard that before. As Mr. Fuller says, everything that we do should be of constructive value, and we should not say anything more than necessary. Because of my quiet nature, the white supremacists have labeled me as unapproachable, intimidating, and a lieu of other terms. I come to work, do my job, and am cordial, but do not divulge my personal life or gossip. I've been told by white supremacists that she considers her office a family and I should open up. There's that metaphor again. The white supremacists constantly make comments on my clothing and try to flatter me, which I respond to by saying thank you. I am personally not interested in getting white approval. Gus, what is the best way to handle this situation if the above things start to appear on my performance evaluations? I feel as if the white supremacist females want me to get comfortable so that I share and they have this over my head. The other non-whites in my office routinely does this. I feel that if I were Asian or white and had a quiet demeanor, this would not be an issue. Any advice? This has come up frequently over the years. And I mean, wow. We can go back for almost the entirety of the time that we've been doing workplace racism, both as a separate program and when it was a part of the compensatory call-in. There are a lot of different strategies for this. If you have been quiet the whole time, like you didn't come to the job as a chatterbox and hanging out, going to lunch with them and all that and telling jokes and everything. If you were not behaving that way when you began your tenure on this plantation, if you've been quiet from the beginning, some people just say, hey, I am not a talkative person. It's not personal. This is just my personality. I'm not going to be the gregarious, loud person in the room and telling every joke and blaring out of a megaphone. That's not me. I'm here to work. If you need any help, let me know, and I'll do all that I can to assist you. Folks that patronize this company, I'm here to work. But I'm just, I'm not a gabby person. And unless that's, a condition of the job that we got to do a whole lot of, running off at the mouth, it generally tends to distract me. I had some people, that's just the way that they explain it. And if it comes up on a performance evaluation, even had some people say, hey, I would much rather it be, that's what I'm going to be critiqued for, that I just didn't do a whole lot of talking. And racists, they can fire you for nothing. They can fire you for not talking. They can fire you for talking. So some people have just said, I'm going to be comfortable with that and do it that way. Others, we've given strategies for if they ask you to lunch, you say no. Maybe you go once a month. You can have a quota. I'll go once a month. Or I'll go once every 6 weeks. That way you go enough that they can't exactly say that you never go out, that you're antisocial, that you're not part of the family, that sort of thing. But this is not a routine thing. I'm not going to hang out. I got money to save or whatever other excuse that you need to in terms of the talking. I'm also a big advocate when they say that you are an introvert, that you don't talk, of getting things back on the job. I'm not just going to sit here and gab about my plans for summer vacation or what I'm hoping happens Easter Sunday or anything like that. what's happening on the job? What are things that we can do here in the work environment? What's that new project coming up? Does anything know, you know anything about that? Oh, what's going down, you know, at the branch 60 miles down the road? Oh, okay, they're looking for a new position. Oh, really? Oh, okay. Get more information on that. Things where I'm more informed. I know I have a better idea of possible options for myself in the work environment, or just being more informed about the work that we're doing, people that we're working with, not gossip, but just constructive information. That's the way I would try and push conversations if you have to have them at all, not on personal business. With the compliments, because I think at the bottom she was talking about how they were complimenting her for her clothing and what have you. I don't know what sort of what you're wearing to work, but I've been an advocate of being conservative with dress, not saying that you're not, but when I say conservative for the workplace, meaning I am not really trying to look that dashing in the workplace. I'm not really trying to wear anything that's going to draw too much attention. I want to be professional. But I'd even said wearing the same thing every day, not like the suspected racist was doing down at the Florida courthouse, but like you have the same basic outfit. Right. Same color, all of that. So it basically it's like you have a uniform so that it almost looks like you're wearing the same thing every day. And I'd said it for that reason exactly so that I don't want to hear compliments from white people about, oh, that looks so nice. Where did you get that from? Oh, love those new slacks. To eliminate all of that, I'm just here to work. And I don't even want to think about what I'm wearing. Two of these are specific clothes that are for the job. They don't stand out. They're professional. There's nothing wrong with them. They're professional, but they're not flashy. These are totally clothes that are, I'm working with white people. So I'm going in to do my work, to not get compliments or anything like that, get the job done. And then we go home. That's one, in my view, just to minimize all of that, because I feel the same way. I don't want that sort of attention. That's not what I'm looking for in a workplace. I think whites do those type of things sometimes in a work environment to lower your suspicion so that you like, oh, wow, these nobody here is racist. They come in and tell me how great I look every day and talk about my hair and all the rest of it. They are great. I think I'll go hang out. That is exactly what they want, so they can get you to lower your guard, and then you become more susceptible. So that would be my suggestion. I have no idea what you're wearing. I certainly am not saying there's anything incorrect about what you're wearing, but I would just continue doing what you're doing. Ignore the compliments and just figure out how you want to go with the conversation. I hope with the wardrobe aspect, in terms of I'm not trying to look cool in the workplace. I hope that makes sense. If folks have any thoughts around that, you can feel free to share. Let's see. I will read the rest as we go. We have more people that wrote in, but I'll share those as we proceed. The email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. The new number again, 605-313-5164. Code did not change. 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. We have folks, if you have your own situation, problem, or certainly anybody, if you have some strategies that work well for neutralizing racism in the workplace, you should be the first to dial in. If we have any suggestions for the second person who wrote in, introvert in the workplace, who reported being mistreated because she's not talking too much about herself with other white people on the job, and they're doing a lot of complimenting of her wardrobe. If we have any suggestions for her, or if you have your own situation that you would like to discuss, proceed. while folks are taking a moment to get themselves together, I could share one more note, make sure I get all of the reports that folks wrote in. Again, not for spectators. Let's see, person, caller in Virginia was with us at the February yoga retreat. Thank goodness I am out of VA. Let's see. Okay, so she's traveling on the train. I love the train. She has two reports. Report number one, racism during hiring process story. I'm sitting on a search committee of three people. This week, we had phone interviews. My top candidate is a black male MBA, very experienced. Two other members of the committee, both white males, favor a white female candidate who only has an undergraduate degree and far less experience than the black male and even the other white female. They know this woman and seem to be friends with her. In my opinion, she was too comfortable, and she has that in quotes, for the phone interview and acted like she already knew she had the job and was just interviewing as a formality. I had the urge, the two white male members of the search committee, that we must bring in an African-American candidate to interview, as it would seem odd that we are interviewing seven by phone, three are African-American, and not one gets an in-person interview. I should also mention that the first two phone interview candidates removed from our list for in-person interviews are African-American inexperienced, in quotes. I said the diversity folks in HR would question us, even though they spent a few minutes explaining what they did not like about the black male. Finally, they agreed to bring him in as one of the three finalists. The white male even said the candidate's name would not be a token candidate. This is the second time in a few weeks that I'm hearing the word token in the context of hiring non-whites. In-person interviews are next week. This just in, as I am typing this, the favored white female candidate just sent an email withdrawing from the hiring process as she accepted another position on campus. Fascinating that she has so many options. Repeat, only an undergraduate degree, little work experience. I'm certain that the non-white candidates have less options. And it seems she was the leading candidate over a black male with more experience and an MBA, which, again, I'm going to stop right here, but she does have a second report. I'm only stopping because it did stick in my craw, and it always does when people say blame black people or suggest that the problem is that black people don't work hard, that black people are lazy. I spoke with Mr. Fuller about that, and he said, you know, in a system of racism, white supremacy, if you're a slave on a plantation, what incentive do you have to work hard? The system of white supremacy de-incentivizes hard work for many black people. You go out and you get an MBA and you work hard, and they still pick a less experienced white woman with less education. And they do this as a matter of practice, as a matter of routine. It's not even surprise that in and of itself, if it doesn't make you lazy, it might make you crazy. So I guess pick one. Report number two. This is a follow-up to share how I responded to being told I raised hell. I remember the metaphors. All right. Recall the following day, my manager sent me a long 11-paragraph email documenting what occurred during the meeting. She did not record the raising hell part, so I decided this week, about 10 days after the original meeting, not to be silent about that, but to address it in writing. Here's what my email said. Good morning, manager's name. We'll call her Sue. I did want to add a note about something that occurred during the meeting. That was omitted from this report. For me, it was the most disturbing aspect of the meeting and worth recording, given the fact that I felt the issue had been resolved via email. As you accurately state, I did feel a conversation was unnecessary, especially if it would cause conflict. Manager's name, we'll call her Jane, stated that I raised hell, fussed, and was upset while discussing the technical problems with system notifications. I took notes during the meeting and recorded these terms. I stopped Jane at this moment during the meeting and stated that her terms inaccurately described my reaction and miscategorized me. I value my reputation among my colleagues and have never been described in this manner to my face, to my knowledge, or behind my back. I am courteous to all and was quite confused and perplexed that Jane would use these terms, presumably reporting an incident secondhand. Jane did apologize for using these terms and said she would take that off the table. Thank you for sharing notes on this meeting. I believe the notes are accurate and complete with this addendum. I did not receive a response to this email from either Sue or Jane. No surprise there. Metaphors. This is not the compensatory call-in. That is tomorrow. But I talk about metaphors on a regular basis, and it's really just talking about words, being mindful of what people say in a workplace context. Any sort of accusation, you are raising hell, or you're some sort of angry, unruly, any of those type of accusations, especially if you're just asking a question or anything of that nature. If you're not stomping about and cursing and fuming, if you're just asking questions, sir, what was that on page 5? Can you repeat what you said? Sue, what are we doing with the new notification system? Are the notes to the meeting? I mean, if you're just asking questions, making statements, even if you disagree with someone, that should not immediately be branded as, oh my God, we've got some Negro raising hell in the meeting. I can't believe it. What's going on here? Because that happens on a regular basis with Black people. I've experienced it myself. I'm sure many of the folks on the line have as well, where you immediate intimidating all of those descriptors. You're intimidating. I've been described. I think it was a white woman. I think I talked about this before, but a white woman accused me on a job of putting some sort of false information down. We had to do some sort of road trip, and she accused me of putting false information down. And then I went back and got the correct information and showed her what I had recorded was accurate and that she was wrong. And it wasn't, oh, my bad, Gus. You know what? I was wrong. I will do better in the future. You know, you niggers generally aren't too good at math, but that got me that time. I'm going to do better. Right on. Go Cavs. Not that. It was, what? Well, see, the nigger, he intimidated me. See, he came back and he had this report, and I don't know. I was fearful. This happened, right? And in fact, I had a Black supervisor at the time, and so I let him know, like, I gave her correct information, and I got accused of being intimidated. So he went to bring this up, and they accused him of being intimidating. Like, true, this is all true. It happened in the great state of Virginia. But this is widespread. It happens all the time. I would nip that in the bud immediately. Like, what do you mean intimidating? Is it intimidating to ask a question? What are we talking about here? Is asking questions not allowed? Nip that in the bud immediately. If it's any sort of metaphor of anything of that nature, what are we talking about? And I'm not surprised at all. I don't know if they had digital, like audio recording of the meeting, or if they just had someone who was taking like shorthand notes of the meeting, but I'm not surprised at all if it was left out what you thought was the most important part, these accusations that you were raising hell and intimidating coworkers during the meeting. Standard operating procedure. That's why I so encourage, take your own notes. And if you have that recording device, bam, that way you can whip it out, because not surprising where omission, sometimes that will be the act of racism. Certain things will be omitted from the notes that are important to how you have been mistreated and or resolving problems that are problems for you. I guess with the first one, I guess you can let us know how the hiring situation goes. Again, I'm not surprised that the white woman, the beleaguered white woman, system of patriarchy and sexism, down and out white woman, treated just as bad as the Negras. I'm not surprised that undergrad, little experience, and her cup runneth over with job opportunities and immense salaries. The sky is the limit, I am sure. Let's see. Number again. New number again. 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have your own situation, certainly feel free to share. If we have folks, since we did have requests for suggestions for the caller with regards to being accused of being too quiet in the workplace, or any of the other situations that we've heard thus far, if we have suggestions for those, feel free to share. Or if you have your own situation, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings, everyone. I'll just comment on the second caller's request. This particular job subject comes up time and time again on jobs. A lot of times, especially for the most part, non-white Black people don't get in that position to dominate or literally create a narrative of what an employee is supposed to be. For the most part, if it is a Black person doing it, they are basically just repeating what the white narrative is. I've experienced that. So I'll stay on the course of with the white person who is making these accusations about a non-white person. They don't talk enough. It could be a lot of different things. Most of it is some sort of quote unquote comment on that non-white Black person's social behavior. When it comes to employment, as far as getting some additional salary or position or both, that does come into play. But at the same time, there are some jobs, and I was on one of them, that did not require that. In other words, unless the person did not break any of the behavior policies, and that person took the lieutenant's test or the captain's test or the chief's test, that sort of thing, and passed at a particular level, they do not have to worry so much about that aspect. Although it still happens, even on the job that I was on, I didn't have any ambition to want to get a promotion. I didn't take any promotional exams or anything of that nature at all. I didn't want to be responsible for anybody else as far as that concerned. But I'm not against it. I'm not against it for others, then in that case, then you're probably not going to have that particular problem as much. But a lot of jobs are just like the second caller was talking about, to whereas you would have a white person, and the white females are equal to the white males as far as that particular type of standard. And to be able to intimidate and or basically make a non-white person's daily job connection miserable, they do that. I would say the best thing to do is to expect it. And from that standpoint, it probably your tension level would probably go down a little bit because you are not surprised by it and you expect it to happen. Just keep a reference on what are the social behavior outline that is on the job policy, not what Becky says in her opinion, and make sure you stay standing on that because, I mean, if it goes by a choice situation on promotion, it's going to be in their hands anyway, more than likely. As opposed to, as I mentioned on a job that I was on, some positions were based on you taking a test or an exam, or you quote unquote are qualified because you have the skill is certified. You have a skill certification that states that you have passed this test. Now you could be a driver, that sort of thing. But other than that, you know, they're going to have the power to be able to basically constantly get on the non-white person's nerves by having these open criticisms, critiques. Now it may be a task to you may want to speak to the person personally, you know, about it. I'm not against it. I'm not against that, to speak to that white person about, you know, as far as, okay, well, give me details about what do you mean that I don't talk enough. Where is the cutoff level or where I'm talking enough? You know, that sort of thing. It may not be a bad idea. Make sure you command the conversation by asking questions and, you know, basically, and don't help the person with the answer. Don't help that person with the answer as far as they're concerned. And, it may be a situation where they would get it from the standpoint where I do understand now that this Negro is conscious of what I'm doing, and it may subside or go away, you know, at a particular point in time. I've utilized that over the years in some cases, because the very things that he was talking about, I had some of the same criticisms, and most of them I ignored them because it really didn't matter to me as long as I was getting the salary that I was supposed to get, and whatever, you know, based on the standard of someone else that was in the same position I was in, I didn't worry about it at all. But at some points in time, I would ask questions, and normally after a short period of time, it would be silenced and the person wouldn't carry on with that type of analysis, you know, with me. They'd just leave it alone. But those are just some suggestions. Hopefully it would be something that would be helpful to the second caller. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. That is a excellent suggestion about asking. When they say that you don't talk enough, how much is enough? And what specifically am I supposed to be talking about in a workplace context to ask those types of questions that are very specific? And I might even break out a pen and write down, you know, the exact answer. If they tell you that you're supposed to, you know, there needs to be at least 30 minutes of you talking about non-work related activities per week. If that means, you know, who you think is going to win the championship, or if Tiger Woods is going to win the Masters, or, you know, whatever movie of 2019, what's on your vision board. You got to spend at least 30 minutes talking about nonsense everywhere. Okay. Write that down. Then you can go about your plan of, oh, okay, I know I got 30 minutes of nonsense to fill. So you can just go about, what am I comfortable talking about with racists that is not job related, you know, or whatever they say. But that is a great one. Trying to think for the quiet one, because like I said, that's come up so many times over the years. I think we've had some other listeners, callers who have had some great suggestions for when you get accused of not talking too much. And I think that when that the person who wrote in with that, they even talked about that this is supposed to be a family. I think that gets presented all together, that you don't talk enough. We're a family, you know, we're all supposed to be in, and we want to know what's up with you. What's happening with your life? What's going on, you know, with your marriage or your girlfriend and your children and, you know, all the details that we can get on you. I'm certainly not saying this is the way to go, but it might be something to consider to even question that metaphor. I know we had an audio segment recently where they were saying that is not a appropriate metaphor for the workplace. Who is the parent in a workplace? You generally don't have to fill out an application to be a part of a family to even, you know, ask that sort of question. Like, is that really inappropriate for some of the questions that I just raised? You know, who is the parent in this family? You know, do you generally fill out employment applications to be a part of a family? You can even question that. Not saying to do that in a group setting, because they might take that as you being uppity. But if you have a rapport and if someone is using that in a one-on-one basis to ask, and, you know, not trying to be slick, not trying to be rude, but I mean, yeah, I don't exactly think that a family is the same as a workplace. You know, these are strangers. My family, I grew up with them. Someone there changed my diaper. That's not the case here. and it shouldn't be. It's nothing wrong with that. This is not the same as the people that, you know, we are born with and hang out with. There should be a difference. And that doesn't mean that we're not courteous. That doesn't mean that we're not helpful, but there is a difference in how we function and behave. Just something to consider if that metaphor is being invoked as a weapon against you, that this is a family and your behavior is not in line with the family. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, your own situation or any comments on what's been shared thus far, proceed.
Mary Hess.
Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings. Greetings, Gus, and greetings to Mr. Firefighter and all the callers on the line. Gus, I wanted to ask you, like, when you were accused of being intimidating, did that scare you, or did it upset you, or, you know, how did you, I guess, feel about that?
It was just frustrating. I don't remember being scared. It was just frustrating and upsetting because it was like a double insult, because it was a false. This all started with a false accusation from a white woman that I had given incorrect data. And it turns out that she was the one that was wrong. And as I said, not even an acknowledgement of it. Everything could have just stopped right there. Whoops, my bad. And moving. I didn't ask for an apology. No reparations. Just, you know. No, this is not correct. The data that I gave first was accurate. Oh, okay. Moving forward. But no, you're intimidating. I can't believe it. Yeah, I was already disgruntled, and I just remember being very frustrated about the situation. And I think I discontinued having contact with this white woman because I remember reporting it to my manager. And then when she accused him of being intimidating, yeah, I just remember discontinuing having contact with her. She wasn't in our department, so we didn't have to have regular contact. She wasn't someone that I had to talk to do my job. So, yeah, I just remember being frustrated, upset about it, and discontinuing contact with her. It was a triple incident. She was incorrect, false accusation, called me intimidating, and then called my black supervisor intimidating.
Okay, yeah, because, I mean, white people are the worst, and white women are the worst. Like, they They use that. They are such race soldiers. Like they use that to harm black men. They use that to harm non-white men in general, but black men in particular, in a whole lot of ways. And the reason why I asked you about fear and things like that, because when I hear words like that being leveled at black men, I think of lynchings. I think of being fired from jobs. I think of just all of these, you know, I need you to remove the scary black man away from me in some way, shape, or form. Remove him from this job. Remove him from this earth, from this planet. You know, so it just, that's just really, I mean, real things happen behind, drastic things happen behind those types of accusations and those types of, just that phoniness and that fakeness and those excuses that white females that they use to practice terrorism, really. And this lie of being fearful, that's the last thing they are of any black people. In fact, especially black men. But moving on, to the person who wrote in, when they said that if the person were white or Asian, that the quietness wouldn't be a problem, I don't think that's true at all. I think if the person were white, it wouldn't be a problem in the sense that their job may not be in jeopardy. For the most part, it could be, but for the most part, I don't think so. But the reason why I think it would be somewhat of a problem is because white people are nosy in particular. And, you know, they need to get into your business. They need to monitor you. I mean, they even do that to each other. They're just nosy in general. And as far as the Asian, even though the person is not black and so they're not treated the worst, they're still mistreated in white people in order to dominate them because they dominate us all. Let me calm down. Because I'm talking loud. They keep tabs on everybody. And they need to keep tabs on all non-white people so that they can continue to dominate us. And they do that to Asians as well. I wanted to say, in terms of the league, the basketball league, the NBA, getting just more white, with just more white players and things like that. The interesting thing is that they're even doing that with style of play. Like you see the popularity of just the Spurs. And back in the day, teams like that didn't really get any attention like that. It was more like, you know, we had this dominant shooting guard like Michael Jordan and, you know, other people or dominant power forward like Shaquille O'Neal and dominant shooting guard like Kobe Bryant. I believe he was a shooting guard. And you had like Patrick Ewing, who I think was a power forward and stuff like that. You had that type of style of play. But now we have this white style of play where they have no athleticism whatsoever. They can't even dribble, like you said about Kyle Korver. They just stand around and shoot threes. That's all they do. They just move the ball and shoot threes and jack up threes. And, you know, that's what you have with the Warriors, where we're having – what they win, 2-3 championships maybe, and now they're being elevated against above teams like the Bulls, talking about they could be the greatest in history and all this stuff like that, and they're being elevated above these Bulls teams. So they've been in the process of just making the league more white. And just even you, and I will say this too, I think that that's a part of moving black people and keeping us moving, like Mr. Fuller said. You see black people in a lot of different jobs that we used to be in a lot. You see us being shifted. You see less and less of us in these jobs. And of course, the athletics is one of them. You see us less in customer service. You see us less in hip hop. See us less at the post office, UPS, FedEx, things like that. I'm almost done. So the other thing I wanted to say, the race soldier that I said that I was volunteering with, I think I made her so uncomfortable just with my silence, because it's so interesting about, you know, the other person who wrote in about, you know, their silence and how they are, I guess that person is making the whites uncomfortable. I forget the things that they, excuse me, that they said about the person, but it was something that seemed like it, it made it where they had a problem where they couldn't really monitor the person. So this race soldier, she actually didn't show up on the last day that we were supposed to volunteer together, which was great with me. But I can tell that, you know, when we just don't talk at all, I mean, they don't see, they need you talking so they can know what you're thinking. And so that they can, you know, steer you in certain directions and things of that nature. The last few things that I wanted to say is that, you know, about this lazy thing, a victim today made a statement. She said, like, there are people out there, and she said people, but she was talking about white people. She said there are people out there with resources that are willing to share those resources, but don't focus on the people who are not willing. You have to find the people who are willing to share their resources. And then she said, a lot of times it's not that people are not willing to share their resources. It's just that we are not willing to put the work in I guess, to get what we need or whatever. And actually, the way that she started all of this is she started talking about no excuses for staying at the same level. You know, the interesting thing about excuses and how laziness is projected onto black people as an excuse, as that's an accusation. We're being accused of making excuses for the things that we lack, and that really is just we're lazy and things like that. But but what's really happening is that victims actually are making excuses, and I understand this because we fear them, and that's rational because they're terrorists. We're making excuses for white people when we say that, when we sit here and we talk about laziness. It's like, and then at the same time, you people will say we have to work 10 times harder and things of that nature. How am I too lazy to work 10 times harder? No, that is an injustice. That's not a matter of laziness. And ultimately, you're addressing one or the other. You're addressing one of us at least. Why are you addressing the victims? Why aren't you addressing the people that are committing the injustice? So no, ultimately what you're doing by calling us lazy, you're just making excuses for white people practicing racism. And again, white people are to blame for that because that's a matter of fear. And that's a matter of probably not wanting to lose these resources that this person was referring to. I'm assuming that she had recently got some resources from some white people. The last thing that I wanted to say is that Kyle Korver practiced racism in that article that he wrote in a variety of ways. And I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, guys.
Woo. Sorry. I mute my line so that I can chuckle or what have you. Like, wow, she's going to make her last comment. Kyle Korver practiced racism, and I will mute my line right on. Suspected race soldier, Kyle Korver. Wow, much obliged, Ivy, with the commentary, or I guess suggestions for listeners in terms of the laziness or just excuses in general. That's why I brought that up. That's why I've been addressing it so much, because it's so common. I hear it all the time. I've heard it my whole life, even before I was talking about racism, even before I had an understanding that, oh yeah, we're in a system of white supremacy. That would be the excuse that was presented to explain all types of black shortcomings in the workplace, in the school, same thing. I remember hearing teachers when I was in high school. This is like 11th grade, 10th, 11th grade. I remember hearing teachers saying that black students, so they're talking about black students that are like 15, 14 years old, said that they're lazy. That's the problem. They're lazy and they don't want to learn. And I remember thinking at the time, like, something about that seems really crazy, like, just really not believable. Like, children are generally pretty curious, and you know, I'm here, I work pretty hard, I feel like, and that's what I was thinking, like, I'm here and I work pretty hard, and I don't know, just something seems really crazy about that's the conclusion that the black student, they were talking about black students specifically, that they are lazy, and that's why they don't want to do, or that's why they're not doing as well in school. I hear it all the time, and in my view, nothing could be further from the truth. When you have, and particularly if we're talking about in the workplace, where you have situations, the caller that wrote in, you got less qualified white people that are being promoted. We hear that every week. White people that were a black person trained them. The black person has way more experience, and the black person who trained them doesn't get the promotion, ends up training a whole other crop of white people who get promotions and raises while they're still stuck at the bottom of the boat, bottom of the ladder. All the time. That sort of thing, as I said, de-incentivizes. In my view, that doesn't mean that you are lazy. It just means that you're in a system of white terrorism where white people cheat all the time. And then they get the ultimate insult to come back and say that you are lazy after they've abused and mistreated you and done everything to see that you end up being in last place in the race of life. The hiring situation, I did want to take 1 second on that. Just that is so common in terms of that comfort the caller in Virginia talked about, where the white woman on the phone interview seemed like she wasn't even. We've had people call in and talk about their prepping and studying and doing all this so that they can give better interviews, stronger interviews, and can answer questions correctly and can project their voice and be confident. And you know, and this white woman, how long is this interview going to be? Like, it's just chilling on the phone, like super casual, like, oh, in fact, I'm withdrawing from that. I got another interview. I'll catch y'all later. I mean, that's what I mean. Like, it's even in the situation that I was talking about with the yoga studio, that was about a white woman being hired, a destructive hire, as they said. This job wasn't advertised. This was just white people going about white welfare, white people going out. Oh, this is my pal. You worked over here. My white friend here hired you. I'll hire you too. That's how this whole situation ended up going down. That right there, the system of white supremacy is a major, in my view, a major contributor to why you have a lot of black people who end up being frustrated or not working as hard in the workplace, because they see this. They've seen this for years where other white people who are not qualified, certainly who are less qualified, less experienced, less educated than they are, and they get these jobs, it has a huge detrimental impact on how hard you want to work, even if you want to work for that company at all. Dr. Welsing talked about that. She talked about that regularly, Grant Sester, about interview or doing therapy, third generation physician, psychiatrist doing therapy with black people who had been so mistreated on the job and seeing that they were not progressing. They weren't getting those raises. It was other less qualified racists who were getting those jobs. They said it just totally ended up ruining their motivation, and they ended up quitting and not even wanting to work or to even look for a job. I think she talked about that on the program specifically. Anywho, number again. New number, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Not a spectator broadcast. Make sure I get that again. If we have this many black people hanging out, listening live and or on the phone, I would hope all of you are doing spectacular in the workplace, that you all are fresh off of brand new promotions, raises, new projects. Things are just going sparkling for you on the job. Could not be better. No signs of racism, tackiness anywhere. In fact, you're about to get a brand new office, brand new computer, maybe even a leased company vehicle. I hope that is the case, and you can just take notes on things that are happening to other victims in your workplace. other folks dialed in with a hand up if you have commentary to share. Line should be open. Proceed.
Marcos.
Hello. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I yield.
Much obliged, Irie. Stacy in the UK, let's get our obligatory timestamp to 16 a.m. Saturday morning in London. Greeting, Stacey.
Hello to you guys and to the rest of the callers. I just wanted to comment on the person who...
Your volume is a little low. My apologies.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the person who wrote in about the comments they're receiving and also being accused of being quiet. So I think in terms of the quietness, I think they do have to determine what the implications are of those comments. So if it's just people being generally nosy, but there's no actual risk to them in terms of their job or promotions, whatever, I would just ignore it. I wouldn't necessarily change. You know, I would from time to time make a point of being sociable in inverted commas, but I wouldn't, you know, go out of my way. And I, in particular, would try not to worry about it too much because these things can really, you know, cause anxiety if you're worried about the implications. However, if it's coming from a manager and, you know, it's been raised in, well, actually, the fact that it's coming from a manager, whether it's in a sort of performance review setting or they've just made a general comment, I would take it a bit more seriously. And at that point, I think, as you were saying, I would have a definite strategy in place. So have my speaking quota, how many times I'm going to have conversations a week, who with, and even then be strategic about who with, and set those topics and focus on asking more questions than answering questions and practice that, because it's not something that comes easy. And I'm not even saying that I'm that good at it, but, you know, it's worth taking that kind of approach to it. And I think the firefighter's point about promotions is a really important one, because it may be the case that your job isn't immediately at risk, but you have to think about what you are prepared to give up, because those questions are being asked sometimes because people are trying to undermine you. I don't care what level they're at, and people can be generally nosy, but sometimes it's a strategy for knowing how they're going to undermine you, attack you, whatever. But if you determine that you are going to be quiet, reserved, that does have a knock-on effect sometimes in terms of your ability to progress within the organization. And I would just, you know, after you've determined what you're prepared to give up, focus on what you're prepared to give up in that particular company, but focus on the skills and things that you can learn should you at an appropriate time want to move on to another organization. That way you've got exactly what you need in terms of your skill set and your experience, recruitment in racism in the recruitment process notwithstanding, to progress. And then the last thing I will say in terms of those sort of trigger words, intimidation or being intimidated, I think we need to be, well, we as in non-white people need to again be prepared for when these words are levied at us, because they are trigger words and they're being used to intimidate. Even though you're being accused of being intimidating, it's a threat. I would get comfortable with those kinds of accusations, because that's exactly what they are, assess whether there is a real risk to it, but also know that just because somebody feels intimidated doesn't mean you're being intimidated. Somebody can feel intimidated because they have issues, whether they're being racist, whether they've got nervous issues, whatever. It doesn't mean anything unless you're being directly accused of something. And that's the question that I would ask. Am I being accused of being intimidating? Has something happened? And then once that accusation is not forthcoming, I think that will be the end of it. And I'll meet my line there, Gus.
Much obliged, Stacey in the UK. Appreciate those suggestions. Hope they're helpful for the caller who wrote in. Thank you for your patience, Irie in Louisiana. Oh, are you still with us, Irie? Or
hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
Oh, there she is.
Hi.
Go ahead, Ari.
I'm sorry. I got disconnected. I had to call back. So I wanted to talk about or mention something in regard to something Ivy said. When you feel stifled on the job because of negative attitudes and also not being promoted, something that I used to do to make an unrewarding situation more rewarding was I would make sure I saved money so that way I could reward myself with, like, I don't know, like something small, or just having the knowledge that I didn't go over, you know, I'm not living beyond my means because I know I'm probably not going to get a promotion anytime soon or any other bonuses. So I'm treating myself right financially and putting money to the side. And I know that it's there in case of a emergency or if I do want to do something that, you know, again, is rewarding. And I think that's something other people could do. And also just staying on code. And like you said, Gus, not being surprised. The treatment that we endure is the treatment that is going to reoccur until the system is changed. So if we do things to make sure that when we go to work, we're as compensatory to ourselves financially, I think that would be something healthy to do. And I have two compensatory requests for whomever is listening and able in regard to workplace or employment. There's a friend of mine, she lives in Oklahoma City. She's in a shelter, women's shelter right now. She's non-white, about 23 years old. No college, but she has managerial experience in retail. And she's ready to work. She's on foot, but she's willing to travel by bus, ride share, etc. And I have another friend in New Orleans. She relocated back here from Dallas after being evicted. She, had temp jobs, you know, rinky-dink jobs, people being racist, giving her the runaround. She finally lost her house. She's back in New Orleans with family, and she's been looking all over and been getting the runaround here, too. She has a degree from Xavier University in political science. She keeps her ear to the ground with, current affairs and, you know, entertainment, politics, and labor. She is a useful person. If someone can help either of these ladies get some gainful employment, at least on maybe even a trial basis, give them some faith that somebody's out there willing to allow them to be functional in this society, please get in touch with Gus and he can let me know and I can let them know. And I'll end my turn. Thank you. I'll listen and mute my line. Good night, Gus, and good night, everybody.
Much obliged, Irie in Louisiana. UntilJustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com. My email address, you can feel free to drop me a line if you have details or information to assist. Let's see. The caller, I think at 9817, did I hear you before as well? 9817.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Your volume is also a little low. If you could speak up or either move the receiver closer to your mouth.
Hold on. Let me adjust my phone. Are you able to hear me now?
That's a little better. Just make sure you have lots of black self-respect and speak up.
Got to speak louder. Okay. Hi, Gus. I was the one who actually wrote you that email about what was going on at work. I've been in this organization for about 7 years, and I've had, this would have been my third internal promotion. On Monday, I would have completed my six-month probationary period in this job, and today I was called in the office and by my boss. They requested to extend my probation by 3 months, and it basically was on the basis of some of the things that I mentioned in the email in regards to, you know, my personality, not so much the work quality. So my question for you is, I didn't feel comfortable signing the extension, and I did not sign it because I did not agree with what they were saying, but I guess at this point I'm trying to figure out what is the best thing to do. As I mentioned earlier, I've had multiple promotions, I've gotten commendations, I've never had performance issues in the organization, and so this kind of hit me out of nowhere at 3 o'clock, you know, on Friday. I'm called in and to have this period extended, which would mean it'd be easier to terminate me.
Wow, I'm sorry that you're having to deal with all this for a place that you've worked at, you know, I think you said for 7 years. And I'm glad that you were able to dial in to give us additional information, because I think some of the callers were saying it would kind of depend if this is just a coworker. I think Stacy was saying if this is, you know, a manager, you take it more seriously. And now knowing the full context, this is, you know, about a potential promotion that is being withheld around this. So that's even more serious. Now we have even more context. You said that you didn't.
Well, it's not so much a promotion. Now I was promoted to this position, mm-hmm. but I'm still in the probationary period of the position. And on Monday, I would have, you know, finished my probation, and it would have been more difficult to be terminated, but they're requesting to extend the probationary period, if that makes sense.
I got it. I understand now. Yes, ma'am. Woo. Cal's decade, just paying attention to terms. They love to keep the Negros on probation. The language of incarceration, how it consistently pops up with Black people. I've been noting that the interesting ways that I hear the word probation popped up with the use of Black people who are not even in a jumpsuit per se. But anyway, why did you not feel comfortable signing the extension?
To me, signing the extension was almost an acceptance that the accusations that they were making were valid, and I didn't feel that there was any evidence. No one has really come up to me, my colleagues, so to speak. I'm assuming they're going back to the boss and not coming directly to me, so that's why I did not, didn't sign it, because I felt it was an acknowledgement of the claims that they made.
Right on. Thank you for the answer. In my view, I think this is one of the ways that white people practice racism, white supremacy. If this is being used as justification for extending your probationary period in this position, as opposed to going ahead and solidifying it and, okay, you're here, no more probation, bang, this is your spot for the time being. And especially as you're saying the detail, I say that the devil is in the details. Anytime you're speaking to, conversing with whites, and they don't have details, they can't speak with logic, details about why they're making these decisions, and it's something that's causing you a problem. Oh, yeah, I would have extraordinary suspicion that they're directly, deliberately practicing racism. Because that can be so vague, like you're telling me that I'm going to have an extended probationary period because I don't chat enough. Like it would have to be super detailed. Like I don't talk enough about what exactly, so that I can make sure, because this is important. So what exactly do I need to make sure that I'm discussing more? And let's write that down. How much? Exactly what I said before. Like, I have 30 minutes of talk time that I need to fill talking about, you know, non-work related items per week. Like, it would have to be super detailed. It would have to make a lot of sense. Like, it would be right. Difficult. Go ahead, ma'am.
I was agreeing with you. And, you know, some of the things during this this meeting that we had was that were mentioned. That, you know, I work in a legal office, mm-hmm. And kind of a support role. I don't want to give too much information out, but that I gave, you know, other people the cold shoulder. I was intimidating. I, you know, they just don't feel comfortable, you know, with me being there. But at the same time, I listen to your show pretty regularly. You say they talk out of both sides, or they take both sides of the argument, because during this meeting, she also said, you're very confident, competent. We find you really, you're very, very smart, and we want you to grow here. And if I wanted to terminate you, I could terminate you, but we want to give you an opportunity so you can continue to, you know, grow in this department.
Wow. That's,
Yeah.
I mean, if that is the case, I can definitely see why you would have some apprehension. Like, that is not the, hey, we love you. You have done great work. We think you are brilliant, and we want to nourish your career here and see all the brilliant. I mean, wow. Okay. I'm feeling that. Like, I could fire you right now. You could be out of here. We think you're great, but I could fire you right now. But I'm not going to be like, wow, what? Really? You really want me to stay here? Okay. And then the reason for all of this is you don't talk enough. And we find that to be intimidating. And you're not a part of our, again,
team.
I would.
I'm yes. not a part of the team or the family.
Did they give you a written document with like specifics about, you know, what you need to make better? Because that often is what happens in these sort of situations. Did they give you like documentation?
Yes, I did take the paperwork. I just did not sign it. And basically, it's just taking, like, customer service classes, taking classes on interpersonal skills. You know, they mention a lot that, you know, you may not feel how you act in the office is an issue, but the perception is from everyone else is that you kind of exclude yourself from all of us. So that was mentioned. So I have classes that I have to take, but I just feel, you know, and I was, and maybe I shouldn't have said this, and I'm still learning, Gus. You know, it's always a learning experience. You know, if they felt that I was a poor fit, you know, then they would transfer me, you know, to a different department. But that doesn't seem to be, you know, an option that they want to explore, or it's not an option that's on the table. Because I feel like it's a hostile environment, and you know, as I said, I worked previously like right down the hall, so my previous boss, they know everyone. I've never had any issues ever with performance or personality, but you know, they were basically against the idea of transferring me out. So I don't know if I should just. You know, I'm obviously going to have to comply with what's in the documentation, but also, you know, if I should just comply for the 3 months and then try to find another place of employment. So I've never had this happen, so I just don't know which direction to really go.
Definitely see if listeners have suggestions, because this has happened so many times. That's the thing I want to emphasize, that this is not unique to you. Mm-hmm. I just concluded this is one of the ways that white people practice racism, is that they will just pick anything arbitrary. This nigger over here is a little too quiet, and that'll be our justification for abusing them or withholding their promotion or whatever it is that you don't talk enough, because we've heard this so many times. I've been accused of this for just nothing wrong with your performance at all. You show up on time, never late, work is great, brilliant, all of that, just you don't talk enough. I would, if they have given you like classes, trainings, that sort of thing, I would comply. No problem. Yeah. You're vested. You've been here 7 years. All right. I'll take the trainings. I'll do this. But I would try to get as much detail as possible, because this is, in my view, it's vague and detail.
Yeah.
How much am I supposed to be talking? Cold shoulder. That's another metaphor. Consistently on this program, I think we say, hey, be courteous to everybody. You know, morning, Ted. Afternoon, Susan, like speak to everyone. I think we've stated that consistently. So I don't think anyone is ignoring. It doesn't sound like you're being mute on the job or ignoring people. So I would want that, you know, explained as well, just to make sure that can be stopped.
Sure.
Right. So that they're not continuing.
Right. And with that, I do have to comment with the boss. You know, I do say when they come in, I do say, you know, good morning, you know, every time they would come in. But it's almost like, and I think I've heard several of the listeners, several of the speakers say, it's kind of like a game. So, you know, I acknowledge her, and she may not acknowledge me at all that morning. So I got to the point where when she would come in, you know, I would look at her and smile, because basically it was one-sided. You know, so I would give her acknowledgement, but I wouldn't just say, you know, I'd stopped for a while because of the fact that I was not getting, you know, a response. Sometimes I would get a response, other times I would get ignored.
I've heard this one as well. I'll see if listeners have a thought, but my suggestion is, and I think Mr. Edward Williams is the first person I heard to say this, I recommend speaking. It's not contingent on whether they respond at all. Some of it is for this very reason, that if you do what they do, you will end up being accused of being, oh, you're giving cold shoulders, and Bill said you didn't even greet him. That sort of thing will happen. So to help stymie that, the code is you just speak regardless. They don't ever have to speak. If I work there for another 7 years, morning, Bill, no problem. See you in the morning, Bill. And you just keep moving. It doesn't have anything to do with them at all. Totally. This is my code. I understand how white supremacy racism works. This is a part of my speaking. I got to get my 30 hours of chat time in. That's at least 2 seconds right there. Morning, Bill. And I did speak, and I hope somebody else heard that. And I just make sure that I keep doing that. That way they don't say that I'm one of these mute niggers around here who's just aloof and doesn't acknowledge family members. Other folks who are listening to you all, because we've heard this so many times, folks who have suggestions now that we have a little bit more information.
I guess.
Stacey in the UK.
Yeah, can I, does the caller, what's actually in the policy in terms of the performance and what counts as good performance, and what feedback has she had? Was this just totally out of the blue, being called in without any prior indication that there was a problem with her interactions with other people in the team? You know, I'm just wondering about that, because I would, if that's the case, go back and, in writing, ask for clarification on those points. Be very careful about the tone of the email, but be very clear that you're asking for more information because you are surprised, because you've not had any kind of feedback but prior to this, but also check what's actually in the policy and what counts as grounds for termination. And my recommendation as well, I've mentioned this earlier broadcast, I think it's Racist Women at Work. Because I think it's one of the best workplace racism broadcasts that were done on this program. It's quite an old one, but there was a caller who was in a very similar position, and she just talked about her strategy for dealing with this very similar issue, but also just being aware that, you know, you're not, as Gus said, the only person that's gone through this. So just hearing how it was dealt with in that situation, which sounds very similar to the one that you're encountering. But I'm at my line there, Gus.
I think that was from 2011. We didn't even have workplace racism as a broadcast at the time that we did that segment. Do we have other callers with any suggestions for how to deal with this? Extending probationary period on the grounds of not talking enough in the workplace?
Gus, can I just ask one more thing?
Yes, ma'am.
Your UK context is very, sorry, your US context is very different to the way, well, my experience in the UK anyway. So the other thing I was wondering is, because she's been in the organization for quite some time, can she also make use of her networks that already exist, particularly if it's that she's been accused of having problems where she'd been in an organization for 7 years and none of these issues have been encountered before? You have a track record in that organization. So to say all of a sudden you're this totally different person is very suspect. And, you know, so can you make use of those networks that you've already had? And also, I think the last point is that we, as non-white people, need to be a bit more self-serving. And I don't think we always are. Do you really have to wait for them to try and transfer you out? Or can you make your own moves, whether that's in that company or elsewhere? But, you know, specifically at this point, trying to look for other opportunities within that company. So not leaving it up to the mercy of these particular race soldiers that you're dealing with at the moment. I'll meet my line.
Did you want to answer her question?
Yes, I've had a little, I had some difficulties hearing some of what she said, but from what I could gather, she was saying to make use of the other networks, make use of networks that I've built at the company since I've been there, and also considering going elsewhere and not putting the ball completely in their court. And one of I currently work for like a government entity, and I just, you know, I guess I had this thought process, you know, that it was more stable. So I'm a little bit, I guess, more hesitant to get out into the private sector, and I'm basically the type of person that once I'm in an organization, I don't really like to move outside of that organization. My fear with using going the internal route is that this evaluation is probably part of, I want to say, like public record due to me working in a government office, so other departments can, you know, request that. So I just feel that it's going to hinder me now that I've had these glowing, you know, reviews in the past, and now I have this document, you know, that's saying that I need to have my probation, you know, extended. So I just fear that now that I've gotten this reputation, people are going to talk and I can apply for other positions, but you know, people talk, and that's just one of my fears, and you know, why I'm somewhat hesitant. And I also think that during my period that I'm in, since I'm still technically in probation, I don't think I can apply out until I finish probation. And since they've extended it, it's kind of put me in a bind, if that makes any sense.
Hope that answered your question, Stacy. You can let us know if it did not. Did any of the other callers have suggestions, strategies to help out our caller here?
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter.
I'm just sitting here thinking that the difficult part. Well, it's difficult in general, but difficult part to me is that it's like I correct me if I'm wrong, that the position is an appointed position, correct?
No, it's not. It's not a position that I was appointed to. No.
Okay, it's something that you sought after?
Yes, but it was a promotion. So I wasn't, you know, I wasn't appointed the position. I was actually told by someone else about the position and encouraged to apply for that position. I interviewed for it and received that promotion.
Okay, well, within that, it was qualifications, correct?
Yes.
Okay. It just sounds like that this white person or persons is just enacting their power to mistreat you. I'm hearing, and I think it's real on what you're saying, is that the whole idea about something being in your record, you know, that sort of thing. I guess the only thing I can think of is to take an inventory of what they gave you as far as suggestions on remedying the alleged problem. Keep a diary of your own of what you are doing during that this extended probationary period. You know, it's kind of frustrating because regardless of all this, what I'm saying, it's still going to go right back in the hands of that white female, you know, on what she wants to do, you know, when it comes down to it. It's not even a unionized situation, you know, I don't think, correct?
Well, it is a municipality,
That can assist you. That can assist you.
No.
Right. Although a black person, even in that situation, they can still be harmed, but white people are less wanting to harm a black person in that way, because there's so many white people also that's in a similar position. They would have a tendency to be less aggressive in a unionized situation to harm a black person where something is, you know, right there on paper as far as a precedent. But just take an inventory on what they told you in the meeting and try to achieve it. Apply something personally to yourself that, you know, when you leave the job that day, that, you know, that you kind of like re-energize yourself so you can go back and keep working during that probationary period, you know, something additional, you know, I don't know your personal situation, but whatever that is to you that can, you know, recharge your efforts, cause you're going to need it, during that quote unquote extended probationary period. And try not to worry about it too much. Try not to worry about it too much, because basically what is going to be done is in the hands of that white female and maybe a few other white people, you know, also, you know, and, you know, just don't let it tear you up internally is what I'm stating, you know, that,
right.
You know, hey, if you got someone, extended person, that you value their, connection with you, you know, share that with them also. So you have some, you know, what do they call it? You have an extra boost from another person, to put it that way, you know, that's stating, you know, hey, I mean, just basically telling you some of the same things that we're talking about, you know, that can be an assistance also. It was for me. Only thing I had to do was have my mother tell me a couple of times when I was in some worse of situations, you're not going to be flipping hamburgers. And I didn't worry about it. I went to work the next day, you know, as it says in that book that's called the Bible, in the Valley of the Shadow of Death, and I walked right into it and didn't worry about it, what the white people said, you know, because I knew somebody who knew me personally, you know, and I valued their opinion, and that it bothered me less, I put it that way, when I went to that job, mm-hmm. type of thing. So all of those things, you know, help out. You know, as far as from my experiences, my own personal experiences, you know, from some like 28 and a half years on the job that I retired from. So
right.
Those are just some of my thoughts. Hopefully I made some sense.
Much of
you did.
Didn't mean to interrupt. Just was going to say thank you, retired firefighter. Ma'am, were you going to add more?
No, I was just going to, you know, say, yeah, he did make some sense. This is just, you know, I guess when you go from having, you know, good performance reviews and commendations from, you know, two different departments, and all of a sudden now, I just feel like strategically they're using that extended probationary period to find, you know, little things and to be able to get rid of me. But, you know, I guess I'll just have to just try to, you know, comply with, you know, what they're asking me to do. And, you know, like he said, ultimately my fate is in the, you know, my white boss's hands, and that I just have to leave it at that and not get too down about it.
I do think that's important for all of us. I think the system of race, Edward Baptist, the half has never been told, where you can be doing phenomenal work. He had the incident where they would be picking cotton, and let's say, you know, you pick 45 pounds of cotton. Great. Maybe that's more than anyone else picked, and you still get beaten. It wasn't necessarily about whether or not you did quality work or not. Sometimes they just want to practice white supremacy, and that can, you know, be manifest in a myriad of different ways. I think with those performance reviews, I think that too, though, happens to a lot of black people who are not lazy on the job, who work really, really hard and take, you know, pride in trying to do the best work that they possibly can, and are accustomed to being told that, hey, you have been working hard, you're doing great work, because it's true. And then, you know, all of a sudden, bang, you know, man, I don't know, might have to let you go. Like, what? I've been working here years doing great, man. It's just stunning. I've heard that. We've heard that from lots of black people. I think Pam has one of those anecdotes in Black Love is a Revolutionary Act, where it's the exact same thing, where a black person has been getting great reviews and then whammo, you know, terrible. Or it might not even be that, just, you know, whatever, we're going to lay you off or let you go, we're downsizing. And, you know, that's just that. So try as best. I mean, it's difficult, but I mean, really try as best we can to be mindful of that, because those shocks can be devastating for a lot of us. And we kind of think that, you know, we're kind of stay, like I think you were saying before about wanting to be stable. System of white supremacy loves to disrupt that stability for non-white people. So I think with this situation, like, you'll probably be shocked for a few days. So if you can take the weekend to do some self-care, and like a retired firefighter was saying, if you have people that you can be around, who replenish you, who help you feel better, to have some time with them and do some things that are helpful for yourself. Maybe get some exercise in. I think that's always great, so that you can be ready, and then do some counter-racist work, just so that mentally you can be prepared in terms of how you want to move forward. And I would say moving forward with as much explicit detail as possible, so that the end of this 3 months, you've taken all their trainings and courses and what have you that they've asked. You greet all of the employees every day and are courteous and all of that. We get to the end and, all right, seems like you've made some great strides, and continue being brilliant. No more probation. So, you know, we can move forward and be on guard for the next incident of white supremacy racism.
Always have to stay on guard. Thank you, Gus, and I'll keep you updated, you know, as time goes by on what's going on. But thank you so much.
For sure. The number again, new number is 605-313-5164. There we go. 605-313-5164. If you have,
Gus, I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am. Stacey in the UK.
Sorry, I thought you'd finished. Just a couple of things for the female who called in. She talked about not knowing whether or not she could apply for new jobs while she's still in her probationary period. I would casually or covertly find out whether that is the case or not, because it just sounded like she was unsure, so it might not be an issue. So I would suggest that she try and find out whether that is the case or not. She has been in the organisation for 7 years, so sometimes because we're fearful and we're in a particular situation and we're dealing with an immediate race soldier problem, don't give that person more power than they deserve. I agree that this manager has a lot of influence at the moment, but she does have other people who can vouch for her performance, and actually she has a performance record in the organisation, so let that count for something. But when I was talking about using those networks, it was as much about making sure that, because this is how I see race soldiers operating all the time, they go and have coffee with people all the time, and they are being really manipulative, building relationships and just keeping in touch with people purely because they know that they can open up other opportunities for themselves or manipulate some kind of situation. So I would just make it a point, part of her strategy, to keep in touch with the people that she's built relationships with in the past in that organisation, so that this immediate race soldier manager isn't the only person that can vouch for her in terms of her who she is as a person, and make sure that it sounds like they did acknowledge that her performance is up to par, but make sure that that's in writing, because then if it is the case that it's just that they're saying she's not talking to people enough, you know, that's quite vague. But also, you know, it could just be down to a personality clash between her and her manager. And I'm not saying that she's obviously doing anything wrong, but it can be quite easily dismissed if on paper these issues have never been brought up before. So I would just make a point of, particularly as this is a promotion as well, making sure that there is written acknowledgement that there wasn't an underperformance issue. This is about somebody saying you're not being very sociable, which can be easily minimized. So I just mute my line there, Gus.
Context of white supremacy. That in my view, that accusation, it's just so rife with discretion, concept I've talked about on the program a lot, where you don't have to be specific. And as Stacey just said, that can just be a difference in personality, you know, saying that you don't talk a lot. It's so vague and nondescript. And as I said, it's weaponized so frequently to have that be the basis for, you know, extending a probationary period. If other folks have comments, suggestions, your own situation, or if you have suggestions on what's been discussed thus far, feel free. I'm still working on written reports. Make sure I can get all those in. Different report, black female listener. She writes, "My white manager, who is married to a black male, cowbell, is blatantly withholding information from me. Myself and two other white male employees are scheduled to start training to receive our licenses. My white female manager has consistently pulled the two white male employees aside and gave them tips and tricks on how to pass the exam for the licensing. She comes to me only to give me some other white person's work. She constantly bypasses me to tell the two white coworkers how to use the system and what new procedures were implemented. When she comes near me, once again, it's to give me someone else's work. Might be great time for a question. If you see that she, or if you overhear that she's done this, like she's gone to the other whites, giving them some tips on, you know, what to do with the exam, the next time that she comes by to your area and say, hey, I know we've got that exam coming up. Do you have any strategies or tips that might be helpful for the exam? And see what she says. Continuing. One of the white employees in my department who just shuffles papers and puts files away, was out for 2 days. When she came back, as usual, she became the biggest victim ever. She complained she has so much work to do, she needs help, so she will complain to my white female manager that she needs assistance. Now, there are plenty of white people there who do a similar job to her that can help her, but no, she always has to suggest the only two black people in the department to help her. Always. The white woman is the only woman besides management who gets to work real overtime, over 40 hours a week, but always needs help putting files away. This is the same white lady who has an hour to spend in the bathroom talking to her white friends, has hours to spend going to lunch with her white friends, and plenty of time walking around and watching the non-whites in the department. That's why she is never accused of being intimidating, not talkative. She spends her time chatting it up right there. Continuing, the white woman who is 100 years keeps coming over to my department. She said 100 years. The white woman who is 100 years keeps coming to my department to show off the eye problems she's having, to explain what medicines the doctor gave her, her treatment plan, etc. She only does this because I was temporarily disabled, meaning you couldn't miss it. It was obvious I had a health issue. This 100-year-old just can't stop coming over here to boast and brag about her health issue and victimize herself to everyone so we feel bad for her. I emphasize age because racists are ageless. This can be workplace racism and not, depending, as I have a question. What would you call, or have you noticed, white people purposely parking next to your car and watching you until you get out or move your car? I went to park my car before work in the parking garage and picked the space furthest from the door, and this white man just had to park right next to me when there were plenty of open spaces far away from me. He sits in his car and watches me. I got out. He races to get out of his car and get stuff from the trunk while staring me down and locking the doors multiple times so the back lights keep flashing. I get inside the building. He runs in there and stares me down while I am talking to another black guy. This parking thing happens all the time, as I tested this and noticed this with different white people every day. I have been told there's really no racism when it comes to driving, but that's a huge lie. I guess the parking issue, I'll go to that first. I can't say I've noticed that pattern. Just surveillance, period. I feel like black people are watched all the time. But that specific, like a white person, like parking next to a black person and just kind of spying on them, I'll have to be mindful of that in the future. This specific episode is kind of frightening. If I parked really in any context, if it was workplace or, you know, just to go to the grocery store, and a white person parked next to me and I felt like was just had me under surveillance. And then as soon as I got out of the car, they got out of the car and they ran to the trunk. Like, I don't know if they're going to get a semi-automatic rifle, if this is Dylan Roof, or, you know, that would be a major concern. I mean, if that happened in a workplace setting, like, I think I would report that as a security hazard, even if it was someone who worked there, because that just, why are you stalking someone in a workplace context? That just doesn't seem safe to me. That would bother me greatly. And I guess other folks can let us know if that has been something you've seen in terms of whites parking next to you. The white people doing the victim, that's constant, and finding ways of wasting your time. The elderly white woman, suspected racist, coming over and talking about her ailments. I would probably try to stop that as best I could to make it clear that I'm not listening to her, or just telling her bluntly that I've got a lot of work to do and I just don't have time to talk today, because that I've noted that whites, they love to waste our time in workplace settings to come and talk about nonsense. And I mean, I guess if you're facing allegations that you don't talk enough, I guess you can entertain this for a little while. But if you're not facing those allegations, I would nip that in the bud, because whites can, I mean, they love, love, love to waste non-white people's time. Let's see. The other one. Yeah, the assistants. I'm not surprised about that at all. I would document, because if she is able to get help in that sort of way, that means that it could be done for other people. That's the sort of thing, if you're on this job for 2-3 years and something happens where you need assistance, maybe you have to take time off or whatever, and it's, oh, I don't know, we don't generally do that. And you can say, well, wait a minute, back in April of 2019, Molly, she got assistance. She had a difficult time and she got extra assistance with filing. And it happened previously that year in March. See, you can have that sort of documentation to note that we have done this before. So we could do it again, unless this was special for some reason, which is not supposed to happen. Equal protection under the law. That's why Mr. Fuller recommends going back to the Constitution. Everybody's supposed to be treated the same. Let's see. Yeah, I'll stop there. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, questions, recommendations, if you have comments on anything that's been shared or your own situation, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus. I'll take the question or the the question about the what to do about this suspected racist white supremacist in the parking ramp issue. If they're right next to you in close proximity and you notice they're doing this, I would suggest you find some way to arm yourself with some kind of chemical suppressant. Maybe even have a weapon or an ability to pop your trunk to get to that weapon as quickly as you possibly can. Maybe even take the long way around to keep from having to pass this person directly, because this person should be suspected as an immediate threat. I would, if I, as a male, and I see a person doing this, I'm going to be always on guard. Females, and plus I got hand-to-hand training, so I'm not even terrified. I think constantly in my head of how I'm going to disarm anybody, how close I'm going to get to somebody, what kind of weapon they may have, or whatever. I'm already prepared for battle. Some people don't think like that all the time, so if you're not a trained fighter, if you're not strong enough or physical enough to handle for yourself, you might handle a bigger person. You might want to take a very long way around and be prepared to take pictures. I'd immediately start taking pictures and documenting who this person is, their vehicle, their color, the car, stuff like that, so you can make sure that it is, or maybe even capture maybe more than one person doing this to you. I'd find some way to make sure that people know about this. Tell your black coworkers to help, look out for you, make sure you get their phone number. You come in, or they come in, and y'all watch out for each other. For this particular person, I'd put it in an email and watch out for this person. Especially if he don't work there, I'll watch out for this person lurking around in the parking lot. Make sure the security that you work for knows about this, of the building knows about this. Everybody, and your manager. Make sure your manager, if you are not a manager yourself, go up the chain. Make sure somebody knows about this terrorist that you're dealing with. And I'll meet myself like that.
Much obliged, Topello. Longtime listener. Great suggestions. The pictures, I like that as well. To photograph, get the license plate and all of that. Get a picture of them in there as well for this. I think that's one I would recommend. Just make sure that you are mindful of your safety, because I think I've seen a number of incidents where racists were terrorizing black people, and they started recording or getting photographs, and that just incensed the racist even more and made them even more violent. So I guess if you're going to take pictures, if you can do it from inside your vehicle, or just being mindful of your safety, if it's looking like, you know, they're going to intensify or become more aggressive, be mindful of that. But yeah, great suggestions, and take that seriously. That's what I thought. Like, take that seriously. That sounds like something that should be reported and taken as a threat potentially. Other folks who dialed in, if you have either comments, your own situation, or suggestions for all of the different scenarios that have been presented thus far, proceed.
Did the writer state that this person who was stalking her is an employee?
Well, I'm not sure, because she said, let me look back, because I thought she said that he went in the building. Yeah, she says he was locking it, so he runs to the trunk. She gets inside the building. He runs in there and stares me down while I was talking to another black person. I don't know if he worked out, because I don't know what type of setting this is. You know, sometimes you can have a building that has multiple offices in it, or, you know, lots of different things. So I don't know if he works with her specifically, if this is kind of a public building where anybody can just kind of walk into the lobby area, if that's what we're talking about. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, if it is an employee, I would think that the stalkers don't like the idea of being exposed, and I wouldn't necessarily say that she would bring it up to that person directly, but at the first staff meeting, whether he is in there or not in the meeting also or not, I would bring it up. Because if the person's going to kill you, they're going to kill you anyway. You know, they're probably going to kill you anyway. As far as, so you might as well bring it up, and from the exposure standpoint, from the point of being exposed, then they probably would go somewhere else to do their mistreatment, their acts of intimidating people. That sort of thing. Just speak directly to it. And like I said, not necessarily to that person, although in some cases that may not be a bad idea to do that, but to expose them in some kind of way. I mean, everybody has, they call them battalion meetings on the fire department, but I guess on just about anybody else's job, they call them staff meetings, where everybody has to come in for about, you know, an hour a month, once a month, something like that, or 30 minutes once a month, and some sort of directive everybody needs to know about, or maybe it's a new insurance plan or something like that, something about the job itself, and bring it up, you know, that, hey, I have had a situation where I suspect a fellow employee, male, has been parking their car. There's plenty of other spots that they could have been parking at, and I feel afraid. What can be done about such of the incident? You know, that's, you know, something like that, you know. And because I don't think stalkers like exposed, to be exposed, and they would go to the next person. You know, I'm not saying they would stop doing it. They probably go to someone else. Because normally the person who is constantly victimized, even to the point of something very serious, is that particular fiend is very keen on fear, is very keen on a person reacting with fear, and they don't report anything. They don't seek to expose what that person is doing to them, and I think that goes to the advantage of a person like that. And when they when they become exposed, even if it's not really that serious, maybe the person kind of like, it's kind of like playing, you know, because white people do this all the time with this idea, talking about some, I'm just having fun playing a joke on you type of crap, you know. But even with that, you know, still expose them, you know, to other employees or in a public spot to that person directly in a public place amongst other employees, you know, that sort of thing. So that'd be my suggestion. Thank you.
Much obliged.
I want to add on.
Yes, sir.
I want to add on to, I believe that was a firefighter.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Black firefighter. I'm gonna add on to that. If you have a code of business conduct at this place of, you know, that you work at, and this person is working with your company, you might want to check out the bullying. If you have bullying or some form of harassment policies, and inform your manager immediately, because you may be required to do that. And you can do that just like how the firefighters suggested, you know, when they have these annual EE, these code of business conduct meetings, you can ask that question and say, hey, you know, or say, hey, I've been harassed by this person, by a certain person, or what should I do about it? And blah, blah, blah. I'll mute myself.
Policy and procedure. Always an advocate. Lots of policy and procedure manuals now do have sections on bullying and all of that, and stalking, and, you know, they had so much the white women in their Me Too success. So absolutely consult that handbook and see if that has some tips, suggestions on what to do if you are feeling unsafe or threatened in any way in the workplace. And the parking lot for sure counts as workplace. Kizzy's cousin wrote in as well. Think we'll have all of the written reports, I think, unless people wrote in since we've been live on the air. Managing emotions in the workplace is a consistent area of discussion on the COWS. I have to constantly work on this because race soldiers are forever putting me to the test, and I do not find this easy. Last week, I wrote in about having to play mammy to a race soldier because it was her first external meeting. I actually felt like not going into work that day, but realized that would potentially lead to more problems for me. That feeling was an indicator that I needed to work on managing my emotions, as racists are going to be racist. I listened to something positive and worked out a strategy for how I would manage the situation. That's when I came up with my plan for not saying too much in the meeting when it got difficult, leaving the race soldier to be the focus of any negativity. Other tips include taking work with me when traveling with a race soldier to external meeting venues. This minimizes the chance for interrogation. Also known as racists asking personal questions. Had lots of that this week. Summary of racist activity for the week. Number one, my race soldier manager commenting that a race soldier female is brilliant. This race soldier has messed up the arrangements for several meetings, which is quite a basic task and should become easier after repetition. She has been arranging these meetings for a couple of months now with some input from me, but mainly my manager. I realized my manager was probing for my opinion. I made no comment as there was no direct question. Lovely. I'm very clear that she was looking to see if I had a negative view of the other race soldier female. My comment, regardless of how justified, would have been used against me rather than addressing this race soldier's poor performance. Hashtag set up a nigger. Very important to, in my view, stick to that code, not just running off at the mouth. In the workplace, really anywhere, but certainly not in the workplace. If a question has not been asked frequently, the best course of action is to remain mute. I've noted poor performance race soldiers get sent on very expensive training, and the same opportunities are not given to non-white people. Therefore, avoid giving feedback when asked, good or bad. Great suggestion, Mr. Williams recommends the same. Number two, race soldier male questioning me about going to a meeting that my manager opened up to the team because she could not attend. He responded first saying he would go, but my manager did not indicate only one person should attend. When we arrived at the room, he made a comment about me being there. I did not say a word as I do not report to him. He is junior to me, and there was more reason for me to be at the meeting than him. Race soldiers don't respect niggers. Absolutely not. Another great illustration. I would say try to avoid getting in like verbal tussles with whites on the job. Like in this situation, like him being there and he makes some, what are you doing? What's this nigger doing in the room here? We didn't ask for an extra nigger. Got kind of dark in here. You could get into a lot of comments, and the meeting was open to all of us. I can be here if I want to. It's a country, you know. You could get into all of that, in my view. Nothing need be said at all. That is the best way to deal with those. Sit down, get all the information that you possibly can. I would make a note of whatever tacky comment he made during the meeting and then proceed. That might be something that could be used later, but try to avoid verbal tussles with whites in the workplace. They mistreat us and cause us to be frustrated at so many different turns. It's not even about picking your battles per se. It's just in a system of racism, white supremacy, you would be doing that all the time. Lots of times they just want to get us upset, frustrated, trying to respond to every time that they practice racism. And you just wouldn't be able to do that. You'd be exhausted. Sometimes the best course of action, oh, I recognize that was another act of racism, but I'm just going to sit down right now as I'm not being directly harmed, get all the information that I can, and I'll just log that as tacky incident number 5003 of the day. Other folks have commentary, questions that they would like to share. Line should be open. Proceed.
Anybody here?
Yes, ma'am. Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, yes. I think all the commentary tonight has just been awesome as usual. I think that, you know, a lot of your advice, Gus, tonight, I found it to be great. And I do think that you should, you know, for the woman who spoke earlier, who was being accused of not talking enough, I do think that, you know, you should speak all the time, no matter what. Even the race soldier that I was volunteering with, there was at least two occasions where she didn't speak back to me, but I continued to speak. And then what that made her do was start to make this this public production really about speaking to me, because she realized how it looked. And even though, other than saying hello and leaving it at that, other than that, I don't talk to her. I didn't talk to her at all. Even though that is the case, I documented everything. So that even though this is a volunteer situation, a very close friend of mine is involved in all of this. Like we were both helping her. And she, the race soldier, would love to, even though she can't because it's a volunteer situation, she can't get me fired or anything like that, but she would love to do what she can do in terms of destroying anything in my life. So she would love to destroy that relationship that I have with my friend. So like in speaking to her, and then she didn't speak back, as I said, I've documented that. So when these race soldiers, when they don't speak back to you and things like that to you, I think it would be good to document that, because there's so many things that I have on this race soldier. Like if she went to tell my friend that I mistreated her in any kind of way, I'm too quiet or whatever it might be, or I wouldn't answer her questions, or she asked me how I was doing and I just said, oh, just ready to get started, because that happened. If she was to go and tell her that and try to create friction between my friend and I have so many things
written down that he has done, calling me an animal and just so many things, not speaking back and all of that. So, you know, I think that can really help you. And I think what Gus said about in terms of increasing your talking to make it to where you are talking about work and doing a whole lot of talking about work. And more than anything, as Mr. Fuller always says, asking questions and asking a lot of questions. The only unfortunate thing about that is that race soldiers, white people are going to be white. Shout out to the Codify software developer. So what that means is they will probably accuse you of asking too many questions. And, you know, that happens a lot. And they don't like that. That's not the kind of dialogue that they want. But at the end of the day, you still have, you know, increased your talking, and they can't accuse you of not talking. And I think it's good that even though you started to not speak back to, you know, the race soldiers because they weren't speaking to you, that you still at least maintain a smile. I can say for me, I mean, I work from home now, but, you know, when I was working on, you know, outside, when they didn't speak back to me at first, that's what I used to do. I used to just come in and just not speak at all. I didn't even smile. So, I mean, at least you're doing that. But as Gus said, that can always come back to you that, hey, you didn't even speak. But I think that in terms of increasing your talking, just talking about work and asking a lot of questions, they can never say that you didn't talk a lot and things of that nature. The thing that I wonder about with that is if you do increase your talking and they still decide to, I don't know, terminate you, I don't know how that works, I wonder, could you do anything about it given the fact that this is a probationary situation, and usually in those situations, they can fire you for any reason or no reason at all. Another thing about increasing your talking, if it comes to this and if you're comfortable with this, I personally wouldn't do this, but if you're comfortable with this and just talking about work is not enough for you, you could just talk about, you could be really, really vague in your responses and in your conversation, and you could just talk about things that are of absolutely no interest to you. So if you're not interested in sports, if you're not interested in our current president, anything like that, and you can ask a lot of questions about those particular topics, like, you know, what did you think about the game, or what did you, you know, what do you think about Trump, or whatever the case may be, and don't really share, you know, how you feel, especially about you know, things like politics. Don't really share how you feel, you know, about that. Just try to ask them a whole lot of questions. Again, even if you're comfortable with saying anything about politics, because you could also have the code of not talking politics on the job, which I do definitely recommend. I actually had one question, which was, well, it was two, and one of them I already asked, which is, if you increase your talking or things of that nature and they decide to terminate you anyway or anything like that, could you do something about it? My second question is, can you afford to leave? Like, can you afford to just decline this extension of this probation? Because I know you were saying that it can go against you to where if you try to apply in other places. So can you afford to just decline the whole thing? I mean, truth be told, if you decline to the extension, they may find you so valuable that they keep you anyway, and they just say, hey, we'll just leave the probationary period as it is, and we'll just hire you right now, or we'll keep you right now, or they could just, you know, terminate you. But if it comes to that, could you afford to leave? The last two things I want to say is that, Gus, I think that the new number that you have, the 605 number, I find it easier to remember, and I just hope everyone has as great a weekend as they can. And I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Well, grand. I hope it works consistently and people do not have problems dialing in. And yes, it'll be easy to remember for all. 605-313-5164. Code didn't change. 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I think the caller, the question that you asked about, can she afford with this situation, if she, you know, says she declines that, I think she stepped away. So we will get her to, she says she would update us. So she can write in next week and perhaps answer your question. Some of the other folks who dialed in, folks that we missed totally, if you have a hand up, comment you would like to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. The first incident I wanted to share, because I have a mixture of some older ones and some more recent ones. This was an older one where I had the white male supervisor. Like, I bring up paper, like copy paper, to the upstairs area, and I just remember bringing some paper to that area. And when it comes to, I guess, measurement of copy paper, they call it ream. So I think it's spelled R-E-A-M. And it's like different meanings to it. And I know they was using the term a ream of paper. And it's like basically like one pack of it. So he would always be, I guess the metaphor I know that's used on here, word master, where he started to giggle. Cause like, do you know what, you also know what ream means? I was like, no, I'm just talking about just getting, bringing some paper. And he goes to urbandictionary.com and he looks up the term and it says anal. All right. Like, what's it called? Sodomy or whatever. And someone, I guess on that site had it, submitted, is it like the same term ream in that way? And it means to criticize and to rebuke. That's on, I think, Webster's. So he used the sexual connotation. And so, you know, he was laughing in his face red. So this happened a long time ago. I think I was still listening to the cows. Maybe it was like 2014 or something. I don't think I ever shared that one. My next one is, and by the way, my current supervisor, when we were having a conversation, she said a customer was reaming her out over the phone. So I don't know if she was using the definition of criticizing or the sexual connotation or whatever. But yeah, my next one is, I was walking out of the front of the courthouse, and speaking of metaphors, like it's a yard, like a grass lawn out front, and it definitely reminded me of a plantation, because they have black males, I guess, doing the yard work out front, and then, you know, I just think how it's mainly white people on the inside. So I just wanted to share that visual that I had noticed, because like I say, they can't seem to, I guess, recruit or hire on new staff that are black males that work in the office. My next one is, there was another metaphor used by a white man who was talking about President Trump. And he says, he was talking to somebody and he says, you know, Donald Trump, he's just like one of those people, the people that you last picked to put on your team, and he's really bad, and nobody really wants him, and you just still add him on your team, cause he's so bad, but you still want him on there. I didn't know what that meant. He was talking to another white person, so he was using that kind of, I guess, sports metaphor about saying that he wants him on his team. I don't know what team he's talking about, maybe a white supremacist team. The next one was a comment that was made in the break room by a non-white, non-black female. And she was on a break, and she says, well, I guess I'm going to go spend some time in the prison yard. So my response was a statement. I said, that might be the most accurate analogies I heard this week. So she walked out of the break room. My next two are from the staff meeting that happened last Friday. The first was, it was another analogy that was made by a suspected racist white man. We were talking about the cell phone policy, and I guess they still have to keep mentioning these recycled policies about minimizing cell phone use or not doing it at all. And he says, you know, just imagine if you're on the surgeon table or whatever, you're in the surgery, and the surgeon, the doctor, he just stops and he gets on his cell phone. And I'm like, how's that compared to what we do and the helping customers or another person? I've never seen no one stop in the middle of helping someone and just start talking on their phone, checking Instagram or whatever. So that was a horribly displayed analogy or comparison. So that's why it's important also about the metaphor. And another thing that happened in the meeting was there was it used to be a portion of the meeting where they would say, well, does anybody have anything they want to say? Because they would do the birthday singing, and then they would have the main substance of the meeting. And they asked the supervisors if they wanted to contribute any comments. And then they were asked if anyone else had anything, so they skipped that part. And they had the black male do the presiding, while all of the other white people, they were standing around them. So the body language of that meeting was extremely intense, because I stood right in front of the powerful white people, and I just had a plain stance, and I didn't clap anything, you know. And I said I was going to do this because I mentioned to the supervisor that people are scared and they don't want to be their own individuality. They don't want to be their own individuals. It's anti-individuality, and people are afraid. They want to follow what other people do. So she said, "Well, I haven't really made those kinds of observations, but they're very interesting." So I'm thinking she shared that with the other powerful white people. So I start putting into practice what I said I was going to do. And the warden, the white female, she went and hid behind a counter structure where they had to look in my direction. So that's how that was. I have one more. A witness in one of these ceremonies. They work.
Your line is breaking up a little bit. Is that just me, or
can you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you now. Sound like just when you started the last report, I heard it sounded like there was a cowbell incident, but I couldn't hear it. So I guess the last report, if you could restart that one, see if we can get it clearly.
Yes, sir. I was a witness in a ceremony. And the black female manager was in there with me and the white clerk. And he was saying, helping with the vows and whatnot. And she was holding up the cell phone, getting it on the FaceTime. And I guess the black female's family was watching from the phone. So what was very graphic about the situation was when they did the hug, when the white man said, "You're now husband and wife." They hugged each other, and the white man grabs in between her buttocks in front of everyone. He put his hand in between her buttocks and squeezed. And I'm looking around like, did anybody not notice that? So, you know, I hurry up and got on out of there, and that's all of the incidents that I have for the week. Thanks.
He rushed.
The white man was marrying the black female?
Yes, sir. They had the ceremony.
He was the new husband. Okay.
Yep.
Wow. All kinds of things happen. They do. People can go get a marriage license at the courthouse. All kinds of things. Wow. Whole system of racism, white supremacy. All eight areas right in the courthouse. Nine areas, excuse me. That is amazing. People listening, I am always, we've been on for a decade, 10-year anniversary of the cows. We are looking Labor Day weekend. We were three people short of California for July 4, still learning, have to plan way in advance for July 4 events. People said to check for Labor Day of this year. So that is tentatively Florida for December 27 to January 1. Still looking forward to greatly. But just to see, folks said, to see if we could do something before then for the summertime, Labor Day weekend, August 29 to Labor Day, or September 1. Labor Day technically is that Monday, September 2nd, but, you know. So 4 days, 3 nights, Lake Arrowhead, California. If you are interested, you can email for more information. But looking forward to hanging out, doing yoga and vegan eating. But it's been a decade of broadcasting. We have covered a lot of material. It's always interesting hearing people say, you know, different things that have stuck out that they've picked up from the program. Emotional control was mentioned, not having sex with white people, not using the word fair. Man, when I hear Cal's listeners saying, I pay a lot more attention to metaphors now. Wow. Words are very important, and that, you know, is really all it is, paying specific attention to a particular type of word usage, similes, those comparisons. As I've said, that is a tactic racists use on a regular basis. Even in my view, referring to the workplace as a family is a deceptive metaphor because it's not the same. But that is hugely important. I'm so glad that you got, because I mean, that's not the same at all. You all are up at the courthouse eating donuts and, you know, horsing around doing everything else between marriage ceremonies. And to compare that to a hospital emergency room setting, I mean, wait a minute now. Part of our job is playing on the phone. That's some of what we're doing here. Fielding racist jokes. Remember that one, the Black and Decker Pecker record. That's part of our job. That's not what you're doing at the hospital. Like, that's not comparable. That's what I say. They will compare things that are not the same at all. And it will insist, will give you a straight face. Master deceivers. Pay attention. Even in the workplace, those metaphors will pop up. You got to be mindful. The word ring, just the same thing, really, paying attention to words. The golden oldie, I guess, with the word ream. And just looking at that word, there are so many different definitions for the term. If you take a moment, check it out yourself. I think the first one, let's see, is talking about paper. And then the next one, it goes down, widen, to bore a hole with a special tool, right? And then the next one, drop down, to clear out or remove. Next one, having anal intercourse with someone, delectable Negro, human consumption, homoeroticism in U.S. slave culture, Vincent Woodard, top 10. The next one after anal intercourse, rebuke someone fiercely. The agent was rebuking him after rebuking him for walking away from the deal. Interesting that anal intercourse and to verbally rebuke, those two would be that close next to each other in the definitions for ream. But that, I mean, for that to come up in the context of a workplace dialogue, even with a giggle, like, what, that would definitely be in the workplace racism diary for the day, because I mean, that's a whole lot of things for workplace context. Like, wow, what professional? Come on. Let's see, the, I guess, the individuality statement that people just they don't want to be individuals. They just kind of go along with whatever is happening. I am sure that she shared that remark with other folks in the workplace, white people network, like no other. So I am sure. And plus, you already have a reputation as, you know, these niggers to stir up trouble in the workplace. So I'm sure that had to be updated. Now, this is the latest thing. The nigger is commenting and making social critiques of what's happening in the workplace. My goodness. But yeah, just be mindful. Continue to be mindful of words, what's happening, and yeah, great observations as always. Our caller down in the courthouse, metaphors. Mm. Do we have other folks that we missed totally? People that had a hand up that we've not heard from at all with comments that they wanted to make sure they got in?
Gus, may I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Gus. I'm calling from California. I'm the school employee. Anyhow, I'd like to recommend to the young lady that called in that was on probation is that she should go ahead and let them extend the probation. And once the probation is extended, what she should do, probably like a week or two before her probation is up, she should go on vacation. And once she goes on vacation, they cannot do her anything. Even if they want to fire her or suspend her or write her up, they can't do her nothing, because once you're on your vacation, they cannot do you anything. So I was in the same type of situation about 7 years ago, and they tried to do me the same exact thing. And I didn't, like Mr. Fuller said, you don't fuss, you don't fight. You just sign the stuff, okay, I accept the extension of my probation. And what I did, like a week and a half before my probation, I took vacation, and I was on a plane to Chicago, and they could never get me for anything. So she should just go ahead and sign the stuff, and just 1 or 2 weeks before her probation is ended, just go on vacation, and she should be safe. So, and have her hang in there. And I know it's kind of tough, but she should be all right if she does what I said. And that's all I have, guys.
Much obliged, caller in California. She did say that she did not sign the review. Are any folks out there, because we've had this come up before as well, where there have been reviews that we felt were unsatisfactory, or write-ups, or some sort of documentation in a workplace where folks have felt it was not in their interest to sign. Is anybody who thinks she should? That she should just go ahead and sign and complete what they ask and see if that helps? Is anybody who thinks that it would be best if she goes ahead and signs it?
If I may add, once you sign, you know in your heart that you didn't do anything wrong, but that's how you kind of beat them at their own game in a way. And like I said, once you sign and you do your probation, and you work hard, you work real hard, you keep everything in line. Like you said, get to work early. Mr. Fuller said, get to work early. Immerse yourself in your work. And like I said, just before your probation is supposed to end, you do the same thing. Take off for a week. They did that to a coworker of mine too, and I told him the exact thing. And he played it just like I told him, and he became a permanent employee with no problem. So, by signing, you're not admitting guilt, you know, but you know you work hard. You know they're playing a game with you, but, you know, if she does that, she'll be fine.
Much obliged. One vote for sign. Any other folks who think she should go ahead and sign? Or?
Yeah, because once you're on probation, they have you. They could fire you instantly, you know. That there's no answer but for that. So if you want to keep on to your job and make it full time, then, you know, you got to like kind of play chess a little bit, you know. So that's all I have for now. And I hope she turns out okay, because it really bothers me when other victims, because it happened to me and it was very stressful. It was really stressful. And the same thing they did, they called me in the office. He told me straight up. The assistant superintendent told me straight up, so, you know, I could get rid of you right now if I want. He said, you are a peg that cannot fit in a square hole, or something like that. I could get rid of you now. So I know exactly what she's going through, you know. So just tell her to hang in there and everything will be fine.
The metaphor is a square that can't fit in a round hole. Wow, they get you with those metaphors. Other folks have any thoughts on the signing or not signing? Or I guess the last few minutes, so I guess this would be last final comments period. We have about 5 minutes, a little less, remaining in the broadcast. So final thoughts period.
And I'd like to add one more thing, Gus. Thanks for everything. You know, I don't use words. I'm aware of metaphors. I used to use the word fair. I take it straight out of my vocabulary now. And I mean, everything, man. I just keen on everything now. So thanks for this program and thanks for everything, man. You helped me out a whole lot. So I appreciate it.
Much obliged, trying to solve the problem. Hope it's been worthy of your time and energy. And yeah, on our cosmic assignment to solve the problem, replace white supremacy with justice. Any other final comments or suggestions folks need to get in for the Friday evening, or folks satisfied?
I want to ask a question, Gus, about your podcast access.
Mm-hmm.
The programs seem to be harder to access for me. I can't get any updated downloads like I used to, so I can listen to the books and the in order like I used to be able to. And it's like, I mean, the racists are on their game, but it's not accessible as easily as it was before. Is there a new site that you can give us that has the RSS codes so that we can get those downloads easier?
Let's see. Racist Interference, they disrupted the iTunes feed, and a lot of the aggregate podcast sites, they just would update from the iTunes feed. We are updated on SoundCloud, and I believe they do have the RSS code there. We're at Black Talk Radio Network. I think the RSS code is there. We're on Google Play. I think the code is also there. That's at least three spots. I can repost the SoundCloud address today. It's soundcloud.com/RWSWJ. Very simple. But yeah, I think all of those sites at minimum, and they should have the code to make it easier. So you can act if you want to, you know, access it on your mobile gadget or what have you, to access the archives, and it should be chronological, all that. But those are at least three. Black Talk Radio Network, SoundCloud, Google Play, at least three that should be current and, yeah, easily accessible.
Hi, Gus.
Yes, ma'am.
Question, before I do that, the archives, there seems to be a gap from like 2012-ish. Maybe 2015 on most of the broadcasts. I don't know if there's a specific issue with the older archives. And then a question is, did you say Anna Griswold Brown is going to be back on The Cowls? I'll meet my line.
Anna Brown Griswold, admitted racist, and we're just trying to work out date and time. I believe she's practicing racism, white supremacy, because I mailed dates like a while ago, and she could have just picked dates and all that jazz. Like, could have made that way easy, but that is the plan. Just trying to get a date to have her back on the program to explain what she did, explain her conduct. That's the plan for that. The gap, I guess, 2012 to 2015, racists like have disrupted our broadcast repeatedly over the years. So, and we have been broadcasting for 10 years. So it's a combination of their disruptions, and we have amassed literally about 2,000 podcasts. So it's a lot. Every time that we get thrown off the air or they cancel our subscription at a site or what have you, it's literally hundreds and now become thousands of files that have to be moved and then reprogrammed and all that. So it's become a sizable chore to re-upload everything and have it back in chronological order and what have you. The archives are still, those archives specifically are available in different sites online. I know Mr. Fox at YouTube has uploaded a lot of content from that time period and even more current stuff and older stuff. So it's just racist being most to blame, number one. And then it has become a just mountain of material to move. I think I solicited assistance. A codified software developer was helping to look into that. That's one of the projects I'm hoping to get done before the end of the year to see if we can get all of that combined chronological so it'll be easier for folks to track down and access. But wow, that is a lot of material to aggregate. Let's see. Should be both of Stacy's questions and Topelo. Do we have anybody else or folks satisfied? I will assume folks are good for the day. We should be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in. 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what has gone down over the past 7 days. Lots of activity, funerals and all. I am going to have something to say about that tomorrow, but 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, compensatory call-in. If you have questions, if you have difficulty accessing the archives, guest suggestions, other problems, difficulty with the new number. I know some folks did say they had some sort of issue with the new call-in number. It's worked for me. Once I found out the new number, it's worked every time. I haven't had a problem, but you can email if that has been of some difficulty for you as well. Untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have questions, suggestions, Irie in Louisiana asked about her friends who are looking for employment possibilities in the OKC area and or Louisiana area, untiljustice@gmail.com, and I can forward along. Much obliged to all the folks who participated. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Friday evening or whenever you happen to be listening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Race soldiers, they take advantage of non-white people all the time anyway. It would be best if we're thinking clearly so that we can at least have a chance to accurately grasp what is happening around us and try as best we can to come up with some strategies, solutions to permanently solve the problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger, or driver. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no, and that includes not being on the cell phone if you are in a vehicle. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.